Welcome to the Monitor Daily Podcast. It's Friday, November 17th. Thanks for joining us. I'm Amelia Newcomb.
And I'm Stephen Humphreys.
Hearing from Middle East correspondent Taylor Luck about his recent reporting from the West Bank was bracing. Violence is spiking. Checkpoints appear overnight. Routes change abruptly. A turn down a side road spurred a farmer to yell that it was a shoot-to-kill zone run by settlers. "We turned around just in time," says Taylor. But Taylor noted another powerful current in Ahmed Abu Hussein, a Bedouin shepherd whose community sees daily attacks from settlers. "Why was he so calm?" Taylor asked. "He told me, 'I am just one in a chain of generations, passing on our herd and way of life. There were troubles that threatened my ancestors, too. The land will remain, and we will remain.'" Now, today's stories. Our first story. Change is a theme that runs throughout today's daily. For migrants, it can be making their way in a strange world. For older people, it's how to live well in a new stage of life. We start by looking at how an unexpected demand on New York City Mayor Eric Adams has transformed him into a national voice on immigration.
"We need help," has been New York City Mayor Eric Adams' mantra for months, as the number of migrants coming to the Big Apple climbs. He's called on the Biden administration to provide more aid to the city and work authorization for asylum seekers. On Thursday, Mr. Adams' administration announced plans for 5% budget cuts to all city agencies in response to the cost of supporting new migrants. Further cuts are anticipated. None of this was part of Mr. Adams' plan. When the former police officer and centrist Democrat ran for mayor in 2021, the largest metropolis in the United States was experiencing problems with crime, homelessness, and lack of affordable housing. But Mr. Adams was soon faced with an urgent situation: migrants arriving in New York needing beds, which the city guarantees. City officials say 142,000 migrants have arrived since April 2022, and about half of them remain in the city's care. The situation has unexpectedly turned Mr. Adams into a leading national voice for Democrats on immigration. He could also influence how New Yorkers and other Americans view President Joe Biden's handling of the record-setting numbers of people crossing the U.S.-Mexico border. "Everything about New York gets magnified," says Joseph Vitiretti, public policy professor at New York City's Hunter College. This story was reported by Hilary Chura in New York for The Monitor.
An influx of migrants is testing the capacity of U.S. cities to respond. Yet a broader look at immigration trends tells a story more nuanced than crisis headlines.
Immigration has been central to the American experiment from the start. After a decline during the middle and end of the 20th century, the immigrant population in the United States is nearing peaks of the early 1900s. This growth is still modest. Immigrants made up just under 14% of the total population last year. It's slower than in other wealthy nations. Gridlock in Congress has kept America's immigration system effectively frozen in the 1990s. And this legislative impasse affects not just safety and security, experts say, but also the economic prosperity of the country as well. "Immigrant workers are increasingly supporting our labor force growth as our population ages and birth rates lower," says Julia Gellat, associate director of the U.S. Immigration Policy Program at the Nonpartisan Migration Policy Institute. "Our immigration pathways aren't keeping up with the ways we want to use them today," she adds. While a majority of Americans think immigration is good for the country, a growing number want it curtailed, according to Gallup. Furthering negative views of immigration are the beliefs that immigrants commit more crimes than native-born residents and take jobs from them, experts say. Both are unfounded, according to decades of statistics and research. This story was reported by Henry Gass for The Monitor. To view the accompanying graphics by Jake Turcotte, go to csmonitor.com/daily.
War is a key reason people flee their homelands. What happens when you try to go home? An increasing number of Ukrainians have returned, finding both balm and new demands for resilience in a changed environment.
Though Irina Lvovich fled Ukraine with her two children to Poland at the start of Russia's full-scale invasion, she always anticipated returning home in time for her son's birthday. In May of last year, she stuck to her plan. But in some ways, that was the easy part. Ms. Lvovich is among the more than 1 million Ukrainians who have made the intensely personal choice to return and adapt to life in a nation that is constantly under threat of Russian attacks. Those who have returned point to the pull of home and reunification with family and friends, and the draw of jobs and a more affordable lifestyle, as well as the ability to live their lives on their own terms again, not as refugees in foreign countries. But the war and long periods of separation have also altered relationships between husbands and wives. Men between 18 and 60 years old are barred from leaving Ukraine, and everyone is learning to live with loss amid the uncertainty of an ongoing war. "I wanted to come home," Ms. Lvovich says. "Coming back wasn't hard. The question was how to live with this. Do you accept that a rocket can fly by? You either accept this or you don't." This story was reported by Lydia Tomkiu in Lutsk and Kyiv, Ukraine, for The Monitor.
Many older people find that the later stage of life comes with new opportunities and the burden of stereotypes and judgments. Researchers are aiming to bust through these in the interest of happier lives, free from discrimination.
The 76 million Americans in the great baby boom demographic bulge will all be 60 to 79 years old next year. But their powerful influence is not retiring. Outlines are emerging of how the now older generation is expected to meet the experience of aging and reshape our culture. Its predecessors are already stretching expectations of elderhood. So, what does it mean to be old? That question filled the cavernous Tampa Convention Center with researchers from all over the world last week, with hundreds of scholarly presentations at the annual meeting of the Gerontological Society of America. The driving angle of the organization these days is reframing perceptions of aging, liberating it from misconceptions and bias. The goal, ultimately, is to support healthier, happier, longer lives. The World Health Organization calls ageism the most widespread form of discrimination in the world, saying it is even more implicit, and hence unchallenged, than sexism or racism. "We aren't born ageist, we're taught," says Tracy Gendron, chair of the Virginia Commonwealth University's Department of Gerontology. "We're definitely making progress. Awareness is on the increase." This story was reported by Clara Germani in Tampa, Florida, for The Monitor.
When it comes to ancient kingdoms and cultures, who has legitimate claim to use that history to define themselves today? And who, if anyone, are history's gatekeepers?
The Dutch National Museum of Antiquities was intent this summer on celebrating the inspiration that scores of black artists have drawn from ancient Egypt. It's been too much for the Egyptian government, whose ministry promptly declared that the Dutch museum was falsifying history, and it banned its archaeologists from future excavations at a UNESCO World Heritage Site in Egypt they've accessed since the 1970s. At the heart of the controversy is a debate over ancient Egypt. Who should interpret it, and how? Who writes history, from what perspective, and according to which rules? The Dutch Museum asks attendees. Modern-day discussions about race and ethnicity didn't exist during ancient times. The long history of colonization and appropriation of Egyptian artifacts provides a potentially explosive backdrop for today's explorations of race and ethnicity. And the Egyptian government is now pushing back with its own interpretations of ancient Egypt. There's been centuries, millennia really, of appropriations of ancient Egypt imagery to all kinds of ends, says Pansy Atta, an Egyptian-Canadian artist. Some of which have been supportive of Egyptian people and their political autonomy, and some which have been deeply extractive. But ancient Egyptian artifacts have been so well preserved and so visible that it's been a real source of inspiration for all people, continuously, for thousands of years. This story was reported by Lenora Chu in Leiden, Netherlands, for The Monitor.
Now, commentary from The Monitor's editorial board on the message surrounding charity this holiday season. The weekend before Thanksgiving kicks off what is often called the giving season. Family and friends prepare to share food and joy for the U.S. holiday. People volunteer at soup kitchens. They begin to buy gifts for end-of-year celebrations. The burst of shopping on Black Friday and Cyber Monday has led to Giving Tuesday, aimed at countering consumerism with caring. At the end of the season, or just before the new year, many people donate to charities for a tax deduction. What may be new for 2023 is that some charities and nonprofits are asking if those on the receiving end of all this largesse ever have a say in how they are portrayed in appeals to donors. For decades, fundraisers have usually relied on narratives and images that played to one of two stereotypes: the suffering of those in need, or the solutions to the problems of the recipients of other people's generosity. The choice in framing, showing hungry children versus new wells for water, was often driven simply by which approach brought in more money. Many in the giving industry are challenging the either-or framing and, even more, who decides what to make a pitch. That's a wrap for the news. You can find the full-length versions of these stories in today's issue or at csmonitor.com/daily. For more Monitor audio, including our serial podcasts, go to csmonitor.com/podcasts. And thank you for spending time with us today. On Monday, we hope you'll keep an eye out for the next installment of our Climate Generation series. It's reported from Bangladesh, where climate change determines where children live, how long they go to school, and when they will marry. The adaptability these young people demonstrate is their hope. Today's Christian Science Spiritual Perspective contributor shares how seeking out a spiritual view of reality, rather than a limited material one, brings inspiration and healing. You can find the column in today's issue or at csmonitor.com/daily. We want to give a quick thanks to our staff, including today's audio production team, Jeff Turton and Isabel Westman.
This podcast is produced by the Christian Science Monitor in Boston, Massachusetts, USA. Copyright 2023.